Thank you. The Talmud records that during the period of the Second Temple, the rabbis introduced many additional holidays over and above those that appear in the Chumash. Chanukah and Purim were two of those, but then every month in Danishtik, every other week, there was another holiday. Some of the holidays were one day long, some of them were 3 days, some were 5 days, some were 7 days, 8 days, and on these holidays, no Tachnun is recited. That's number one. And this is all of these are listed. You can buy this for $2 in any good Judaica bookstore. All of these holidays are listed in a little book that's called Megillas Tainis, that lists off which days are considered holidays when you're not permitted to fast, and you're not permitted to deliver a eulogy. It's not permissible to say a hesped. Us at the hesped of a Tainis. So the Tanoim had an argument at the time of the destruction of the Second Temple whether these holidays should still be continued on after the Zman HaChorban. In the days of the Amoraim, the Second Temple was destroyed in the year 70, in the period of the Tanoim. The Tanoim lasted for quite a while. Into the days of the Amoraim, there was still a dispute whether none of these holidays are observed any longer, with the two exceptions of Chanukah and Purim. Why is it that, what was the dispute whether these holidays should still be continued to be observed? And why do we paskin l'halacha? Why does the Gemara come to the conclusion that they should no longer be observed? So if you would ask me, I would have said, which is the wrong answer, because the Gemara gives you the right answer. If you would have asked me, I would have said, nobody remembers what the historical background is for all of these holidays. So it doesn't make sense to celebrate them anymore. So the Talmud says that is not the correct reason. The Talmud gives the following statement. Talmud discusses an incident that once occurred. The non-Jewish government made a gzeirah ro against the Jewish people. And when the Jews succeeded in praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and overcoming the gzeirah and everything was straightened out, so the Talmud records that they made a holiday. So the rabbis of the Talmud thought that that incident that was described in the Braisa, in the source of Tanoim, they thought that incident occurred after the destruction of the Second Temple. So the Talmud asked Akasha, Akal v'chaymer, ma dach the holidays that were instituted during the period of the Second Temple, after the destruction of the Second Temple, no longer observed. So if something happens now, you certainly shouldn't make a holiday. What kind of a Akal v'chaymer? The holidays that are based on some historical event that happened centuries ago. We forgot the background, nobody remembers what happened. But if a Yeshua occurs right under our nose, of course you should make a holiday. So you see from the Gemara that it's not so. If we experience a Yeshua today, for some reason or another, it's not permissible to establish a holiday. What's the prohibition? What's the impropriety over here? So the Pri Chodesh, one of the major commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch says, and this is quoted by the Chasam Sofer in his Tshuva. Chasam Sofer was from the early 1800s. So they say it's an issue of Bal Taisif. The Torah gave us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us 613 mitzvahs. They said you're not allowed to add on additional holidays. So if you have, let's say, I live in Washington Heights now, in Manhattan. I live in the Yekeshe community, the German community, Washington Heights. So they come from Frankfurt, and once a year they leave out Tachnun. They're big sticklers on saying Tachnun. So once a year when they leave out the Chassidim are very lax about whenever there's any sneeze of a yard site, so they'll leave out Tachnun. But the Yekes are big sticklers. Sometimes they'll send the Chosn out so they should, in order to say Tachnun. They won't want to relieve themselves from saying Tachnun. But once a year they delete Tachnun on Frankfurt Purim. Once a year they celebrate some kind of a Yeshua that happened. No one alive today in the shul remembers what happens in the history books. They say what Yeshua occurred in the Jewish community of Frankfurt. And in Europe they used to have this in various communities. Every community had their own Yontif that they celebrated. Various families celebrated. The Chayei Adam writes that he used to celebrate. There was a Sreifa, there was a fire in his home, and he almost got killed, and then he was Nitzel. So he every year would celebrate in the end of the Chayei Adam. He records the poem that he would recite every year on the occasion of the celebration. The Tosis Yonta family would also celebrate when he was put into prison. The government thought that he was a Morid B'Malchus. He was trying to overthrow the government because he called his Sefer Madani Melech. And they thought he was trying to take over the government, which he wasn't interested in at all. So after they released him from prison, so he made a celebration. Rabbi Soloveitchik mentioned that he didn't remember how. He somehow was a descendant of the Tosis Yonta. He remembers in Europe celebrating this holiday once a year, every year. This is not a violation of Baal Tosef. So the Chayei Adam in his commentary, the end of Hilchas Purim, as well as the Malbim in his commentary on Megillas Esther, they both point out the only time you have an issue of Baal Tosef in instituting a holiday is when it's celebrated by the Jews world over, like Yom Ha'atzma'ut or Yom Yerushalayim, just because the Kaplan and Tura Kartaniks, less than 10 Jews all over the world who don't want to celebrate Yom Ha'atzma'ut, doesn't make it into a holiday that's not observed by all of Klal Yisrael. So what you really have is you really have a problem on your hands. The Talmud says it's prohibited to institute a new holiday that's intended to be observed by the Jews all over the world unless it conforms to the rules and regulations of Megillas Tainis. And those rules and regulations, part of the rules and regulations is that it has to be in commemoration of something that had to do in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. And the rabbis had a dispute. If something occurred during the time of the Beis HaMikdash and the temple was destroyed, are we still allowed to celebrate it or not? So we Paskin, we're not allowed to celebrate it, with the exceptions of Hanukkah and Purim. But if something new occurred now, for sure you're not allowed to institute a new holiday. That's what it says in the Gemara. So what is this puzzle all about? So we see what the Chasam Sofer quotes from the Pri Chodesh. You have a problem of Baal Tosef. The Rebbeinu Shlom gave us 613 mitzvahs, and he gave us Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and that's all. And we're not allowed to add on any additional Yom Tovim. So what is the exception to the rule? What allowed the rabbis to add on all those Yom Tovim during the period of the Second Temple? Literally every month in Donishtik. Every other week there was another holiday, and they weren't throwing parties, but they were deleting Tachnon, and they didn't permit any Hespedim, and no one was permitted to fast. So the Talmud, to explain this, quotes a passage from the prophecy of Zechariah Hanavi. Zechariah was one of the three prophets who was involved in the building of the Second Temple. Chagas Chai Malachi. Talmud tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry at Bnei Yisrael because he gave them permission to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and all the religious Jews stayed behind in Babel. No one wanted to go. People who went back were the Balei Tshuva, were the Geirim, the Mamzerim, the Chalolim. They're not observing the Shvacha Yichist, but the real Frum Eden, staying behind in Bavel. And the Talmud says that the Jews in Bavel would never marry the children from the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, because the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, they had a weaker Yichist. They had Safek Mamzerim mixed in. The Jews in Bavel were the real Frum Eden with the good Yichist. The Talmud tells the story that Reb Chiya came from Bavel to study in Eretz Yisrael under Reb Yehuda Hanasi. And he was a star student. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had a daughter, and he was interested in having Reb Chiya meet his daughter. So he didn't bite. He wasn't interested. And he understood why, because he wouldn't marry an Israeli girl, because the yichas was shvach. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said to his student, "My Torah is kosher, my daughter is not kosher." And he didn't say anything. He didn't want to take her out. He didn't want to meet her, because the yichas of the Jews who lived in Eretz was shvach yichas. So the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upset, he was angry at Bnei Yisrael, he gave them an opportunity to come back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Second Temple, and they weren't interested, so he said, no more Nevi'im. He's angry at Bnei Yisrael, he's not going to send any more prophets. But he had no choice, he had to send three prophets, Chagas Chai Malachi, in order to guide them regarding the building of the Beis HaMikdash. That's apparently a halacha, you cannot, that's what the Tanoim say in the Sifrei, L'shichne Sidushu. That's a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. You're not permitted to build the Beis HaMikdash without explicit authorization of a prophet, of a Navi. Drosh al pi Navi. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to send the three prophets, Chagas Chai Malach. So the pasuk in Zechariah records a shayla, like we have today, Shalas HaTshuvas. The Baal Batim asked Rabbanim Shailas. So in 1948, when they established the Medina, one of the first shaylas was, do we still have to fast on Tisha B'Av? We already have a Medina? Do we still have to fast? So the psak was, yes, we don't yet have a Beis HaMikdash. This shaila was posed to Zechariah HaNabi. Do we still have to fast on Tisha B'Av now that we have a Beis HaMikdash? Of course not. What's the shaila? Why do they have a suffix? So the answer is because the psukim tell us in Chagas Chai Malachi, all three, and in Ezra and Nehemiah it says that when the Second Temple was built, there were old timers who remembered the First Temple. The gap in between the First and the Second Temple was only 70 years. And there were people who were 75 years old, 80 years old, who remembered the First Temple. And the Second Temple was missing an awful lot of things. The Talmud comments on the pasuk in Haggai, where Haggai, one of the three prophets, encourages Bnei Yisrael to build the Second Temple and gives instructions about the details of building it. So the Navi Haggai declares in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please build me a Beis HaMikdash, the Eretz Bo, this is my desire, the Ikovda, I will be honored. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will be honored by the Beis HaMikdash that you will build. So the word the Ikovda is spelled in the Pasuk in Chagai, missing a hey at the end. So the Talmud asks, why do you say the Ikovda, it's missing a hey? Why don't you just read it, the Ikovev? I will be honored, covered. You will give me covet. You will give me honor and glory by building Beis HaMikdash. Why do we have a tradition that the correct reading is the Ikov Don, it's missing a hey? Say the correct reading, the pronunciation is the Ikov Eid, and it reads just as well. It reads better, the Ikov Eid. The rabbis say, no, the tradition is that it's missing a hey to indicate there were five major things that were missing in the Second Temple that were very conspicuous. So the Talmud gives a list of the five things that are missing. Other Midrashim mention the same tradition, there were five major things missing. But list, one Medrash has a different five things missing, the other Medrash has another five things missing, there were 25 things missing. There were so many things missing during the Second Temple that the old timers who were present when they were celebrating on the occasion of the completion of the building of the Second Temple were crying. And they said, this is a Beis HaMikdash, this is a fake, this is an imitation. Ke'ayin, garnished, ayin. Aleph Yudna, this is nothing. It's garnish me garnish. This is not a real Beis HaMikdash. In fact, the Psukim tell us, unbelievable, this is hard to understand. It says the younger people were singing and dancing and rejoicing and celebrating. The older people were crying, and there were so many older people crying, they drowned out the singing and the dancing of the younger people. How can it be? There were so many people over the age of 80. That's what it says in the Tanakh. There were so many people who were crying. My father tells me he remembers on one occasion in the yeshiva in New York, they always have every 3-4 years they have a Chag HaSmicha to celebrate when they have 100 mismochim, so they get all the families together and they have the rabban and give the rosh, so they celebrate a Chag HaSmicha. So on one occasion, my father remembers when Dr. Revel was the president of the yeshiva and they invited Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, that was the father of Rabbi Yosheber Soloveitchik, to speak. So the students were surprised. They never heard Rabbi Yosheber give. They never heard Rav Moshe Soloveitchik give a drasha. He always used to give shiurim. He never gave any drashas on Agadata. So he got up and he said, "All the families are celebrating. They're all rejoicing and singing. I want to cry. These are rabbanim. I remember the real rabbanim in Europe." And he started to quote the pesukim. My father said, "Dr. Revel almost fell through the floor." Here he had all the parents and he wanted all the big veer, he wanted them to give money to the yeshiva, he wanted everybody to say how wonderful it is. And Rav Moshe Soloveitchik says, "But I remember the real Rabbanim, this is a fake." So the Pasuk says that's what happened when they built the second Beis HaMikdash. The old timers said, "This is missing so many things, this is not a real Beis HaMikdash." So that's why the Balabatim had a Shaila. They sent the Shaila to the Kohanim, they sent the Shaila to the Nevi'im, into the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. Ha'evke, should I still continue to cry? Ha'evke b'chodesh ha'chamishi, should I still cry on Tisha B'Av as we have been crying for the last 70 years? The Jewish people accepted Tisha B'Av on their own. That started off as a minig. It started off as a custom. So they asked the Navi, should we continue to cry on Tisha B'Av? Should we still continue to observe mourning? Because true, we have a Beis HaMikdash, but it's still missing. It doesn't compare to the first Beis HaMikdash. It's missing so many things. So the Navi gave them an answer that's very unclear. The Navi tells them, "Some harvi, some achamisha, some asiri, shivasa b'tamas, and some gedalia nasar b'tevis, and what else? I left something out. Tisha B'Av. And Tisha B'Av, Tainus Esther has nothing to do with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, but the four fast days have to do with the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. Yihyu l'sasana l'simcha l'Beis Yisrael. They should be days of celebration. They should be converted into holidays." So the Talmud finds it problematic why the Navi, the prophet Zechariah, words it like that. He calls it Tzom Harvi, Nisanir Sivan Tamos. The first day of the fourth month is Shivasa B'Tamos. Tzom HaChamishi is the first day of the fifth month. That's Tisha B'Av. And so Masiri and so on. So he declares it with the power vested in him. As a Navi, he declares these days as fast days. It never was declared by a Navi as a fast day. It was only a minhag. So the rabbis say on the one hand, he's the first one to declare it Alpi Nevuah as a fast day that you have to fast. Some are even some you have to fast. Then he says, Yihyu l'sasana l'simcha l'Beis Yisrael, you're not allowed to fast, you have to celebrate it as a holiday. And then, so that's already problematic. First he declares them as an official fast day, then he says you're not allowed to fast. And then he continues with a long drasha. The Navi Zechariah says, in the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, did I ask you to fast? I told you the sheep. The Ribbono Shel Olam told us to keep Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha, Ben Adam LaChaver, Ben Adam LaMakom, to be decent to the workers, to be decent to the slaves. and you didn't listen to anything that I told you, and you violated all the mitzvahs ateris. I destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. I sent you into galus, and then you decided to make up your own religion. You made up your own minhagim to fast on Shabbos and Batamis. Look, kindalach, you're not listening to me. Shmir zach dein egen akap. You want to do whatever you want. You want to fast. You want to eat. Do whatever you want. So the rabbis of the Talmud say, what did the Navi answer over here? He gave, not that he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth at the same time, three sides of his mouth at the same time. Correlate Tzom, he says, you have to fast. Tzom Arvi v'Tzom HaChamishi, you're obligated based on the instructions of the Navi. No more minik. From now on, you're obligated to fast. Then he says, it's forbidden to fast. Then he says, optional, do whatever you want. So the rabbis of the Talmud explain this, that the psak of the Navi had three parts. This is a Gemara Rosh Hashanah. The psak of the Navi had three parts. The Navi said, when you have a Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to fast. Fasting is a sign of avelus, mourning over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. If you have a Beis HaMikdash, you have to celebrate, you're not allowed to fast. When you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, should it only remain on the level of a minhag, of a custom, like it was for the last 70 years, that they fasted, they accepted on their own to fast, or should it be elevated to the level of a Direi Kabbalah, an obligation which the Navi commands us to fast? So the Navi said, sometimes you're obligated to fast only because of a minhag, and sometimes I'm obligating you in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitam Navi. When is that? If you live in a period where there's outright persecution against the Jewish people, then you're obligated to fast Mendiri Kabbalah. During the war years in Europe, the Rabbanim said you mechuyif to fast in many Arab countries where there's outright persecution against the Jewish people, you mechuyif to fast Mikar Adin. But if you live in the blessed America where there's no outright anti-Semitism, there's no outright persecution against the Jewish people, so then the Gemara says it's only optional. If you want to fast Gesundheit, if you don't want to, you don't have to. And then the later commentaries on the Gemara say, we today have accepted it as a minig that we fast on all the Taneis. Then the Gemara says, Tisha B'Av is an exception to the rule. That's a Takonas Chachamim. Even though, as far as the Navi is concerned, if you don't want to fast on Tisha B'Av, you don't have to. But the rabbis instituted, that's a Takonah of the Rabbanim. To fast on Shavuos B'Tammuz and Asara B'Tevis and some Gedalia, that's an old minig. That's a minig already from the days of the Tanoim, after the days of the Navi Zechariah. But to fast on Tisha B'Av, that's a Takonah of the Rabbanim. So the Talmud points this out, that the Navi Zechariah gave the people a psak with three parts. Rav Soloveitchik once made a comment, why did the Navi make such an unclear psak? He says, Tzomarvi, Yil Sassan Simcha, do whatever you want. Why didn't he explain it? So he said, because the Balabatim made a mistake, they sent the Shaila to the Navi. When you have a Shaila, you have to ask your rabbi. You're not allowed to ask a Navi. So that's why the Navi didn't give, you're not supposed to ask Ruach HaKodesh. A shaylich in the minhag has Ruach HaKodesh. You have to ask the local Orthodox rabbi, and he'll give you a straightforward answer. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. He didn't mean it as a joke. He meant it seriously. So the Talmud says, the authority of the rabbis to institute all of these holidays that we call the Yomim Tovim of Megillas Tainis is similar to, it's sort of the, the opposite, the converse of the fast days. Vahani kihani, the Yamim Tovim that were instituted bisman ba'ishena during the period of the Second Temple only makes sense during the period of the Temple. After the destruction of the Temple, you no longer celebrate the holidays, just like the fast days that are out of mourning, out of avelus over the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash, over the destruction of the First Beis Hamikdash. The avelus only applies bisman that there's no Beis Hamikdash. When you have a Beis Hamikdash, you're not allowed to observe avelus. So the celebrating of the holidays is only bisman abayis. When you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to celebrate a yontif. What is that all about? So there's a little bit missing here in the Gemara. How do they know Hani Kahani? What does it mean? You have to add on a little bit background. The Talmud tells us that there are 613 mitzvahs. The Talmud tells us in another place that there's a breakdown. We have 365 mitzvahs lo sase and 248 mitzvahs sase. So which exactly are the mitzvahs sase? Which are the mitzvahs lo sase? So the Rambam wrote a sefer where he lists off what he considers are the 248 mitzvahs aseh and 365 mitzvahs lo aseh. The Rambam disagreed with many who preceded him, who had a slightly different counting, so he explains why he thinks his calculation is more correct than many following the Rambam disagreed with the Rambam on a lot of details. So the Ramban disagrees with certain points of the Rambam. The Ramban thinks that the Rambam forgot to count the following mitzvah. There is a mitzvah on the books officially that every time you build a Beis HaMikdash, we haven't built so many Batei Mikdashes. In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they built the Mishkan. In the days of Shlomo HaMelech, they built the first temple. In the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, they built the second temple. L'asid Lava and Yecheskel, it says we want to build the third temple. So the Ramban says, each time, it says when Moshe Rabbeinu completed the building of the Mishkan, it says that they celebrated the Shivas Yimei HaMiluim, and then they had Yud Beis for first 12, last 7 days in the month of Adar was Shivas Yimei HaMiluim, and the first 12 days in the month of Nisan, the Yud Beis Nisim, the heads of the tribes, the princes of the tribes, brought special kavanas. It says in Sefer Melachim, when Shlomo HaMelech built the first temple, so they celebrated Shivas Yamim and Shivas Yamim. It says that they celebrated for 2 weeks. And then it says when they built the second temple, they celebrated for 3 weeks. And it says, Lasid Lava, in the end of Yecheskel, it says when they'll build the third temple, there will be special offerings, special sacrifices that will be brought in celebration for over a half a year. It says that they'll start bringing the special karbanos for Shchodesh Nisan. It doesn't say which year. It just says they'll start bringing the special karbanos on Shchodesh Nisan, and they'll continue through Sukkot. That's a little over 6 months. They'll continue bringing special karbanos. So the Ramban says, what karbanos you bring, and who brings the karbanos, and how long you celebrate, these details have to be al pi ruach hakodesh. You have to have a Navi tell you what to bring and how to bring. But the basic principle that whenever you build the Beis HaMikdash, you have to celebrate, he considered that one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. That's one of the 248 mitzvahs aseh. Ramban has this comment in Anchumish, in the end of Parshas Naso, beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, as well as in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. He considers this one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, one of the permanent mitzvahs kavua, that you have to celebrate whenever you build a Navi. He says in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash and sell the Jewish people into Golus Bavel. And nonetheless, even they're going to be involved with Ehi Lohem LeMikdash Miyat. They will have a miniature Beis HaMikdash there. What is the miniature Beis HaMikdash referring to? So the Talmud in the end of Megillah says this refers to Bati Knesiyas and Bati Midrash Shebet Bavel. First, to all the yeshivas and every Beis Medrash, where you learn, where you daven, a shul, where you daven, they all have the status of a Mikdash Miyat. There is a group of Rishonim who say that that's a real Din D'oraisa. Every shul in the world and every Beis HaMedrash, some say that it's only a remez mid Rabbanan, that's not really what it means. I don't know what it means. If it does mean that, I don't know what it means. But the Rambam and the Sefer Yireim and a group of other Rishonim, which the Chayyadim quotes La'alocha, the Rambam and others say that that's a Din D'menatar, that every shul and every Beis HaMedrash, where they learn or they daven, has the status of a Mikdash Miyat. So there are poskim say, whenever you complete the building of a shul, whenever you complete the building of a Beis HaMedrash, there is a mitzvah in our Torah to celebrate. We don't have to bring korbanos. We don't have to celebrate for 7 days and 7 days, Shivas Yamim Shivas Yamim. You don't have to celebrate for half a year, but there is a mitzvah in our Torah, because whenever you build a Beis HaMikdash and a shul and a yeshiva, a Mikdash Miyat, so there's a mitzvah in our Torah to celebrate. So the Talmud seems to be following this Ramban. The Talmud assumes that there is a mitzvah in our Torah to celebrate on the occasion of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Is one obligated to celebrate every following year in commemoration of the building of the Beis HaMikdash? No, that doesn't say. Only a mitzvah to celebrate on the occasion of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Is there a mitzvah to celebrate every time they improve something in the Beis HaMikdash? Every time they improve the structure, every time they improve the Hakrovas HaKarbonis, every time they improve one of the institutions of the Beis HaMikdash, the Sanhedrin always met in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a din. The last pasuk in Parshas Yisro is about building a Mizbeach, and the first pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim is about having a Bezdin. So Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from the Tanoim, from the Smichas HaParshios, from the fact that these two are written one next to the other, this indicates that we have to have the Sanhedrin meet in the Beis HaMikdash. And whenever you improve the Sanhedrin, which is a function of the Beis HaMikdash, and whenever you improve the Kohuna Gedola, the high priesthood, the high priest has to function in the Beis HaMikdash, whenever you improve the high priesthood, so there, we don't find that there's an obligation, there's a mitzvah to throw a party to celebrate. However, the rabbis in the Talmud understood that such a concept, we just spoke about this previously in the first year, there's a concept of a mitzvah kiyumis. Even if you're not obligated to do something, but sometimes if you volunteer on your own to do something, you have a kiyum mitzvah, you have fulfilled a certain mitzvah. The Torah doesn't always obligate us to do things, but if we volunteer on our own certain things, it does constitute a kiyum mitzvah. So here, if the Jewish people will volunteer on their own to celebrate every year in commemoration of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Jews will volunteer to celebrate whenever they improve the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, or they improve the institutions of the Beis HaMikdash, or if they defend the Beis HaMikdash from destruction. When you have a Beis HaMikdash and the enemy came to destroy it, and you preserve the Beis HaMikdash by being victorious in battle, so there's a Kiyum HaMitzvah. You're not mechuyev to celebrate. The real mitzvah to celebrate, according to the Ramban, is when you build the Beis HaMikdash Mechadosh anew. But if you preserve the Beis HaMikdash and protect it from being destroyed, the Gemara seems to say there would be a Kiyum HaMitzvah. There would be a mitzvah kiyumis of celebrating in connection with the Beis HaMikdash. So basically, that's what they all of the holidays that they introduced during the period of the Second Temple. Whenever the Chashmonoim, the first few hundred years in the Second Temple, there was no Jewish government to speak of. There was no Jewish government until the Chashmonoim. They were under the non-Jewish control. So the Chashmonoim put together an army, and then every time the Chashmonoim were victorious in battle, they made a Yontif. Every Montag and Donishtag, they were on the calendar. It wasn't all in one year. But over the course of many years, they were victorious in battle. So after the victory, they would celebrate every year in commemoration of the victory. What kind of a din is that? That you celebrate when the Jewish army is victorious in battle? You have to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to say Shevach V'Hodiyah. But you don't make a yontif out of it. What prompted them to make a yontif? The answer is, victorious in battle. When you have a Beis HaMikdash, means you preserve the Beis HaMikdash from destruction. The enemy was going to come to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, which was the center of all Jewish activity. When the Chashmonoim were victorious in battle, they preserved the Beis HaMikdash from destruction. And then if you look at the other holidays in the Megillas Taanis, they all revolve about the Beis HaMikdash. Talmud tells us that there were periods of time, you know, historically, without the Talmud also, but the Talmud discusses it sadly. There were periods of time during the period of the Second Temple that the Sadukim were running the temple, not in accordance with the rabbinical traditions of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. They were always celebrating Shavuos on Sunday, on a weekend, because they insisted you stop counting Sfiras HaOmer. You count Sfiras HaOmer for 7 weeks, and it says in Chumash, Mimachas HaShabbos, you start counting Sfira on a Sunday, and you always celebrate Shavuos on a Sunday, a long weekend. Shavuos is only one day, so Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't believe that God gave the Torah. So the Tzedukim said Moshe Rabbeinu loved the Jewish people, so he decided to institute Shavuos as an extended weekend, so Shavuos is always on a Sunday. That's, by the way, where the Christians got their Pentecost from. Pentecost is the holiday of the 50th day, which is always celebrated on a Sunday. The Christians have a lot of things that they carried over from the Tzedukim, from the period of the Second Temple. Women's rights, also a couple of things there, that women and men getting Yerusha equally, a whole bunch of shtiklach that they carried over from the Christians carried over from the Tzedukim, from the period of the Second Temple. So the Talmud says, when they straightened out the issue of Shavuos, when the Chachamim took over the Beis HaMikdash, and they saw to it that Shavuos doesn't always fall out on a Sunday, and you count Sfira Simer from the first day Chol HaMoed Pesach, you don't count from the Sunday following, so they made a Yontif, and every year they celebrated in commemoration of that Yontif. There were issues regarding the Sanhedrin, and issues regarding the Kohuna Gedolah, that it wasn't functioning properly, and when they straightened out these two institutions of the Beis HaMikdash, they made a Yontif, and that Yontif is also celebrated annually in commemoration of straightening out the Kohuna Gedolah and the institution of the High Priesthood and the institution of the Sanhedrin, the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. So the common denominator, the Gemara says, is when you build the Din Min HaTorah, the obligation Min HaTorah is to celebrate when you build the Beis HaMikdash. You don't have to celebrate every year in commemoration of the fact that you built it. But if you volunteer on your own to celebrate in commemoration, so there's a Kiyum HaMitzvah. So that's why it's not a violation of Bal Tosif. It's only a violation of Bal Tosif if you're not allowed to add on to the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. If you add on something new, Yesh Me'ayin, from outer space. But if you're doing something which Min HaTorah is a Kiyum HaMitzvah anyway, so you're not in violation of Bal Tosif. And the same is true if you'll volunteer to celebrate on the occasion of preserving the Beis HaMikdash. When the Jewish armies are victorious in battle, when you have a Beis HaMikdash, when they're victorious, when you have a Beis HaMikdash, and they preserve the Beis HaMikdash from destruction, so then you're celebrating over the preservation of the Beis HaMikdash. Or you celebrate over the fact that they straightened out the mess in the Beis HaMikdash, the Karbonos were being brought in an improper fashion. They celebrated when Mr. Nicanor, a non-Jew, donated gates to the Beis HaMikdash, when the Jews and non-Jews donated major donations to the Beis HaMikdash. They made a Yontif and they celebrated every year in commemoration of that Yontif. So this was the Tzad HaShoveh. So the rabbis of the Talmud say this was not a violation of Bal Tosif to institute a holiday that's observed by the Jews all over the world. Should be a problem of Bal Tosif. Unless it has to do with the Beis HaMikdash, then there's a Kiyama Mitzvah along the lines of the Ramban. There's a Kiyama Mitzvah that you're celebrating over the Simcha of the Beis HaMikdash. The fact that we have a Beis HaMikdash that was preserved and so on. So after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so the Talmud says, Vahani, Kihani, just like Tisha B'Av doesn't make sense to fast Tisha B'Av when you have a temple, you're not supposed to be in mourning over the destruction of the temple if you have a second temple, even though it's lacking so much. So too, the holidays that you celebrated, that were instituted during the period of the second temple, doesn't make any sense that you should still continue to observe those holidays after the destruction of the second temple. The only two exceptions to the rule the Talmud tells us are Chanukah and Purim. So that's taka, a big question. Why are Chanukah and Purim an exception to the rule? Why are we still observing Chanukah and why are we still observing Purim? So before we answer why we're still observing, we have to explain, have to get a little more background about Purim. When did the story of Purim occur? So according to the Talmudic tradition, all the Midrashim, in the Talmud and the Midrashim, it always... The Goyish historians keep on changing their minds. Every 50 years they say, against the Gemara, that the story of Purim occurred during the period of the Second Temple, and then they go back to say the Gemara is right. I think now they hold the Gemara is right. It doesn't make a difference. The Talmudic tradition is that the story of Purim occurred during the period of the 70 years of Golus Bavel. So the commentaries on the Gemara, the Shagas Aryeh and his Sefer on the Gemara, Turei Yevin, raises the question, how do they have the right in the first place to establish Purim as a holiday if there was no holy temple? If the Gemara says, HaKal V'Chaimer, Ma, the holidays that were instituted during the days of the Second Temple after the destruction of the Second Temple, you're not allowed to continue observing them. It's a violation of Baal Tosef. So the Gemara says, so if Yeshua occurs now, if something wonderful occurs, and salvation for the Jewish people occurs now, when there's no temple, you're certainly not allowed to institute a Yontem. So how did they ever institute the holiday of Purim? If according to the Talmudic tradition, the story of Purim occurred during the 70 years of Golus Bavel, there was no Beis HaMikdash. It had nothing to do with any Beis HaMikdash. It should have been prohibited in the first place to establish a Yontem of Purim. So all of the commentaries on the Gemara say the same answer. The Rabbanim, during the generation of Mordechai and Esther, felt that this was going to be an Aschalta de Geula. This is going to lead to the building of the second temple. That's what that term means. The term Geula, when we speak about Geula, Geula means the building of the temple. We're now in the middle of reading Chumash Shmos, so the Ramban has an introduction to the, in his commentary on Chumash, Ramban has an introduction to the book of Shmos. So he says, the Sefer Bereishis is the story of all the beginnings, the beginning of the world, and the beginning of mankind, and the beginning of the Jewish people. Everything begins in Bereishis. Bereishis is the beginning. Shmos is the story of the first Golus of the Jewish people and the Geula from that Golus. But then the Ramban poses the question, how can I say that the book of Shmos tells about the Geula from the Golus? The Geula is when they entered Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even live so long. So the Geula doesn't appear in the book of Shmos. So the Ramban says, no, you're making a mistake in asking such a question. Geula means when you have a Beis HaMikdash. And the Sefer Shmos ends with the building of the Mishkan. He says, what does Golus mean? Golus doesn't mean when you're leaving Eretz Yisrael. Golus means that they didn't have any longer, he quotes an expression from the book of Iyov, from Tanakh, they had Soda Laka Alei Ohaleim. They had a Hashuas Hashchina, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the Ovis, the holy forefathers had a Hashuas Hashchina. The rabbis comment on the Pasuk, Vayal Me'ol of Elohim, by Avram Avinu, that the Shchina left from above him. So the Pasuk seems to imply that the Ovis of Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, Hein Hein HaMerkava, as if they were the chariot for the Shechina to rest on them. So during the lifetime of the Ovis, when they lived in Eretz Yisrael, there was a Hashuas Hashchina on the Jewish people. When they went into Golus Mitzrayim, they lost this Soda Laka Alei Ohaleim. They didn't have this Hashuas Hashchina. When they built the Mishkan, that's how the book of Shmos ends, with Truma Tetzaba by Yaakov Pikud, the building of the Mishkan, four long sedres. So that's the Geula. You can live in Chutz Loretz and have a Geula if you have a Beis HaMikdash, if you have Hashuas Hashchina. And you can live in Eretz Yisrael, you're not in Golus, but it's not a Geula. The Geula is when you build a Beis HaMikdash. So the Talmud has an expression, Aschalta de Geula. Years ago, the Torah Karta always used to attack the Hungarian Rabbonim in the 1920s and the 1930s. They always used to write essays attacking the first chief Rabbi Cook. Where did he come up with this idea? Rabbi Cook has in his writings, he speaks a lot about Aschalta de Geula. There's Geula, and then there's the way towards Geula. You're on your way towards Geula. So many of the Hungarian rabbis attacked him. What did Rabbi Cook make up his own terminology, his own concept. Either you have geula or you don't have geula. There ain't no such thing as an aschalta de geula. The truth of the matter is that the expression appears in the Talmud, and the poskim take it as a halachic concept. They have dinim that depend on aschalta de geula. The Chasam Sofer has a certain psak halacha lemaise. During his lifetime there was some kind of war, Austro-Prussian war, and he considered that an aschalta de geula, and he gave a psak based on his assumption that that was an aschalta de geula. And his psak of the Chasam Sofer was quoted later by none other than the Minkatcher, who was the main antagonist towards the Zionist movement. He quotes the psak from the Chasam Sofer that every war in the world he considers as an aschalta de geula, even the Austro-Prussian war. Rashi in his commentary on the Gemara says, when the Gemara says milchamas are aschalta de geula, so Rashi says not the First World War, Second World War, the Austro-Prussian War, the Spanish-American War. Rashi says the wars, Mechemet HaShechrur, Mechemet Yom HaKippurim, the wars, who's going to be the balabas over Eretz Yisrael? That's an aschalta de geula. That looks like it's leading up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Who says the First World War? The Munkacher writes that the first, he didn't live so long to the Second World War. He writes about the First World War, that it was an aschalta de geula, and therefore he has a certain psak based on that assumption, because the Chasam Sofer understood the Gemara that all wars in the world are an aschalta de geula. Rashi doesn't say like that. Rashi says only these wars, only the wars that have to do with Eretz Yisrael. Are we going to be the Balabatim? We'll have the ability to build the Beis HaMikdash, or the Goyim going to be the Balabatim, and they won't let us build the Beis HaMikdash. We won't have any Shlita. That's called an aschalta de geula. So the commentaries on the Gemara all say that the Chachamim, who were alive during the Tzeit, and this concept of aschalta de geula, again, was not invented by Rabbi Cook. It appears in the Talmud. There is geula. Geula means the building of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the definition given by the Ramban in his introduction to Sefer Shmos. And aschalta de geula means something that's going to lead towards the building of the Beis HaMikdash. In what way did the Chachamim feel that the Nes Purim was an aschalta de geula? So different commentaries on the Gemara have different suggestions. The Nesivos was one of the major Gedolim who lived in the early 1800s, wrote quite a few Svarim that are all popular. So he has, among his various Svarim, he has a commentary on the Gilas Esther that's printed in the standard Mikros Gedolos on the bottom of the page, that's called Megillas Storim. So the Nesivos in his commentary writes, the Chachamim felt at that time that this was an aschalta de geula because they succeeded in wiping out Amalek. The rabbis of the Talmud give us a formula. The rabbi said that there are three mitzvahs that have to be fulfilled in connection with each other and in a specific order. First, you have to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. That's mitzvah number one. Mitzvah number two is that government has to sponsor an army that's going to wipe out Amalek. And after that, step number three is that the Jewish government has to sponsor the building of a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. So on the occasion of the Nes Purim, the Tanakh tells us that Haman was an Amaleki. Simple mashmoz of the pasuk. There is a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi says it's not exactly so. We call him an Amaleki because he wanted to wipe out all the Jewish people, but he really wasn't from Amalek. That's a question, but the Poshep Shat in the Pasuk is that Haman was an Amaleki, and the Jewish people wiped out the Amalekim at that time. So the Nesivos says this in his commentary on the Megillah, this was an Aschalta de Geula. They had a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. When they built the second temple, there was no Jewish government until the times of the Chashmonaim. That was way later. Chashmonaim were 204 years before the destruction of the second temple. That was a long time later. So they couldn't do the first mitzvah in order to establish a Jewish government, but they did the second mitzvah to wipe out Amalek. So the Nesivos writes in his commentary, that's why the Chachamim felt at that time they had a right to establish a Yontif, because they felt this was going to lead towards the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and it's an aschalta de geula. Parenthetically, he claims that they later realized that they had made a mistake. He said they didn't have a Navi who told them it was an aschalta de geula. They sized up the situation. He thinks that they made a mistake, that the wiping out of Amalek did not have nothing to do with the building of the second temple, and that's why he interprets the passage in the Gemara Megillah. That's why they later cut off part of the observance of Purim. Originally, Purim was instituted as a holiday with an Issa Melocha, that people are not allowed to go to work, like on Yomtif, like on real Yomtif. And later, the rabbis took off the Issa Melocha, so the Nesivos claims that's the reason why. They took off the Issa Melocha when they realized that it's not an Aschalta de geula. That's a fascinating side point. But he claims the reason why they originally established it as a Yontif, because they thought there was an Aschalta de geula. The Malbim, in his commentary on the book of Nehemiah, which is already a misnomer. There is no such thing as the book of Nehemiah. The rabbis of the Talmud say there are 24 Sforim in the Tanakh, and Ezra and Nehemiah is one book, and Nehemiah did not deserve to have a book named after him. That's what it says in the Talmud. Gemara gives the whole reason why. In the Christian Bible, they counted Nehemiah as a separate book. So many Rabbanim, after the Christian Bibles were printed, they gave a whole explanation why Nehemiah already got his kapara, now we can call the book Al Shem Nehemiah. But the Pasha Pshat is that it's only Sefer Ezra. There's no such thing as the book of Nehemiah. But anyway, the way it is in our Bibles, the way we have the Bible, so the book of Nehemiah begins with the story. Nehemiah was a butler to the king of Babel, and he served him breakfast in bed one fine day. And Nehemiah had just gotten a letter from Eretz Yisrael about how terrible the situation is, that the Jewish people are starving, and the Goyim are giving him a hard time, they're not letting him rebuild Yerushalayim. He comes into the king and he serves breakfast in bed, and it says in the pasuk, "V'hashegel Yoshev Etzlo," the queen was there also in the bedroom. When he serves, a side point, and no one knows why that's mentioned, "V'hashegel Yoshev Etzlo," what's the significance? The rest of the story doesn't lead up to anything. So the story, the way it appears in Nehemiah, says the king asks Nehemiah, "You look sad today. What's wrong?" So he says, "I just got a letter from Eretz Yisrael about the terrible situation that he's Jewish, the Jewish people, the bad situation. They don't let him build the Beis HaMikdash." So he gives him a blank check. He says, "I'll give you as much oil as you need, as much wine as you need, as much flour as you need. I'll give you as much money as you need. Go rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Do whatever you want." So there's something missing from the story. Why did the king give the butler $100 million for the building campaign of Yerushalayim Beis HaMikdash? For what purpose? He comes in, he looks sad. He says, "Why are you so sad?" "I got a letter from Eretz Yisrael about this sad situation. Give him $100 million, build the Beis HaMikdash." Doesn't make any sense. So the Malbim explains, that line is the key. HaShegel Yoshev Etzlo. The Malbim thinks that it doesn't mean the queen, his wife. It means his mother. Who is this king of Babel? Artaxasta. The opening pasuk in Nehemiah says the king was Artaxasta. Who is this character Artaxasta? He was the son of Esther Hamalka. We read the Megillah, you know, on Purim in 45 minutes, and we think the whole story is over, finished, the whole story is over after 45 minutes. The story was not over. The end of the story is that unfortunately they lived happily ever after. Esther Hamalka was living with this Goyish king forever and ever till the old man died, till the Shikir Goy died. She had no choice. The Gemara explains why it was permissible for her. It was Pikuach Nefesh. Why shouldn't it didn't be Yeharik Bal Yavar? So the Gemara gives a whole explanation why it was permissible for the Jewish girl Esther to live at the Goyish king Ahasuerus. They had Vayolad Banan Babanas. They had a lot of children. The children had no Jewish education. Not New York education, not Atlanta education, not Louisiana, nothing. They had no Jewish education whatsoever. The child was brought up as a Goy Gomer, Artaxasta. He didn't know from nothing. But when Nehemiah the butler came in and he gave breakfast in bed and he gave this long sob story about Eretz Yisrael, Segefelach, so the king would normally have said, "So what has got to do with me?" So he says, HaShegel Yoshev Etzlo, the queen mother, his mother was there. So she said, "Kind meine, I'm Jewish, you're Jewish, we're all Jewish, you have to give him the money, you have to pay for the building in the second base, HaMikdash." That was what her husband Achashverosh said, Ad Chatzi HaMalchus. Rashi always quotes, Ad Chatzi, I'll give you everything. He was the king. Achashverosh was the king over 127 Medinas, and Eretz Yisrael was in the middle of Europe, Asia, and Africa. Eretz Yisrael is still in the middle. All the three continents connect by Eretz Yisrael. They said, "I'll give you everything, Ad Chatzi HaMalchus, not in the middle. I won't give you a building of the Beis HaMikdash. Darling, I love you." He tells his wife Esther, "Whatever you want, I'll give you, but I won't give you permission to build the Beis HaMikdash." So the old man died, Achashverosh, and his son took over Artaxasta. When Nehemiah came in with the sob story, it doesn't say that it was all designed by Esther, but the Malbim thinks that that's what the meaning is. HaShegel Yoshev Etzlo, the mother told her son, "Look, you're Jewish. You have to give permission and you have to give money to build the Beis HaMikdash." So the Malbim thinks that that's why the Chachamim felt that it was an Aschalta de Gula, because getting Esther, getting a foot into the palace, the fact that Esther was there, and when the old man Achashverosh dies, one of her children is going to take over, they thought for sure this is going to be able to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash politically, and he thinks that that's what actually happened, that Esther convinced Artaxasta, her son, from Achashverosh, that he should give permission and pay for the building in the second temple. But more than that, we have a greater reason why the Chachamim in that generation felt that the Nes Purim was going to lead up to the building of the second temple. The Nabi Yirmiyah complains to the Jewish people. Yirmiyah Nabi was one of the prophets at the time of the Churban Abayis. So he complains the Jewish people violated their bris, the covenant that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made at Har Sinai. We just read about the Aseres HaDibros. We promised HaKadosh Baruch Hu we're going to keep all of the 613 mitzvahs. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. We violated the bris. So the Nabi Yirmiyah says, the Christians have made this passage very famous in the book of Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah Nabi says, you violated the bris, I'm destroying the Beis HaMikdash, I'm going to have to make a new Christus bris, I'm going to make a bris HaChadosha. That's what they call the Gospels. They call the Gospels the bris HaChadosha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to make a new Christus bris. And this time, this new Christus bris will not be like the old bris. The old bris, you were mefer, you violated it, and it was broken, the deal was off. This new bris, I'm going to engrave it on your hearts. Not literally, but figuratively speaking. The new covenant I'm going to make with the Jewish people will be engraved on the hearts, and they won't be able to run away from it. It's not like a Sefer Torah. You throw out the Sefer Torah, you walk the other direction, so you don't have any shaykhs with the Sefer Torah. If the new bris is engraved, if the Torah is engraved on your hearts, so there's no way to run away from it. So that's what the Novi Yirmiyah says. I'm going to make a new Christus bris, and this will enable you to enter Eretz Yisrael a second time and to build a Beis HaMikdash a second time, because we had no right to build the first Beis HaMikdash without Kabbalah Sator. So then when the first bris of Har Sinai was broken, so the Baruch Shalom took away the Beis HaMikdash, he destroyed Beis HaMikdash. Then he says to Yirmiyah Navi, I'm going to make a new Christus bris, a new Kabbalah Sator, and that will enable you to build the second Beis HaMikdash. So the rabbis comment, when was that bris HaChadosha fulfilled? When was that new Kabbalah Sator? So the rabbis say, that's what happened after the Nes Purim. The Pasuk says in Megillas Esther, Hayehudim, the Jewish people at that time, Kimu v'kiblu aleihem al zaram, they re-accepted upon themselves. What do you mean they re-accepted? Kimu v'kiblu? Kiblu aleihem. They accepted to observe the holiday upon. What do you mean Kimu v'kiblu? They accepted a second time. So the rabbis say, the original Kabbalah Sator was at Har Sinai. And that was a little shaky, because on the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, Rashi quotes the comment from the Medrash, Vayisyatzu b'sachta sahar kof aleim har kegigas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shoved the Torah down our throats, and he said, we better accept it or he's going to bury us alive. The simple translation of the Agoda in the Gemara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced the Torah upon us. And then the Talmud says, but in the days of Ahasuerus, out of Abbas HaNes, after the Nes Purim occurred, they were mekabel Torah meiratzon. They accepted the Torah out of their own free will. And there's a famous Medrash Tanhumeh on Parshas Noach, where the Medrash says, Medrash poses the question on the Gemara, what do you mean that God forced the Torah down our throats? That the Jewish people of Maimon HaSinai didn't want to accept. They all said, everybody said together, Nasim and Ishma. They were all prepared to accept it. Tosfos says that kasha on the Gemara. It's a strange Gemara. So the Medrash Tanhumeh explains they were prepared to accept the Torah Shebichzav. Torah Shebichzav is not that difficult. But Torah Shebal Peh, that's Koshe kamoves, how does it say? Koshe kamoves, aza kamoves, abba koshe kisholkino. Torah Shabbat Peh is very, very complicated, very difficult, not as easy as Torah Shebichzav. So the Jewish people were never prepared at Har Sinai to accept the Torah Shabbat Peh. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced it on the Jewish people. And later in the days of the Nes Purim, they accepted the Torah Shabbat Peh out of their own free will. And that's why historically we know that the main development of the Torah Shabbat Peh was really after the Nes Purim. We have very little, hardly any, there's very little development of Torah Shabbat Peh from before. The Mishnayos have Zeh Medrash Dorash Yehoyad HaKohen, and Mishnah Shkolim, something for the period of the Bais Rishon. They had traditions, but the main development of the Torah Shabbat Peh was Ezra, and Anshei Knesset HaGdoilo, when things picked up. That's the expression that says in the Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, if I'm not mistaken. It has an expression that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Bnei Yisrael at the time of Chagas Chaim Malachi, the period of Nevuah is over, and from now on is the period of the Torah Shebal Peh, and now Haskes Ushma Dibre Chacham, now you have to listen to what the Chachamim say. We live now in the period of the Torah Shebal Peh. Up until the Anshei Knesset HaGdoilo was the period of the Torah Shebichzav, now it's a new Tkufa. In fact, there is a dispute in the Talmud regarding the Book of Esther. Is it Torah Shebichtav or is it Torah Shebal Peh? Is it incorporated into the Tanakh or not? The accepted opinion today is that it is part of the Tanakh, but when they found all of the Tanakh in the Qumran caves in Eretz Yisrael, they only found the 23 Svarim. They found everything except for Megillah Esther. So the archaeologists are not sure how come it was missing Megillah Esther. Is it that it was a library, or so somebody had taken out the Megillah Esther that day? Every library is missing a book or two. So one of the books is missing. Someone took it out and it got lost. Or is it that they never had it? Till the days of Damaroyim, there was a dispute. Tanoim Amaroyim had an argument whether Megillah Esther belongs in the Torah Shebichtav. Is it part of the Tanakh or not? And the reason for the dispute was because the whole story of Nes Purim was the reacceptance of the Torah Shebal Peh. So that's why half of the Tanoim and Amaroyim held that the story of Esther should dafke be Torah Shebal Peh. Shouldn't be Torah Shebichtav. And even we paskin that it is part of the Tanakh. So the halacha says Nikris Sefer and Nikris Igeris. It's half, one leg in, one leg out. It's not the full status of Torah Shebichtav. If it's missing, 49% of the Megillah Esther is missing a word here and there, it's also good. The other Svarim of Tanakh wouldn't be maker like that. Megillah Esther is only half Torah Shebal Peh and half Torah Shebichtav. Because the whole story of Purim was the reacceptance of the Torah Shebal Peh. In fact, it's interesting, we have an expression when we say, we have a halacha, this halacha is Ish min pi Ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu. This is an old tradition till the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. You know how the Rambam writes it? In the Hagdama to the Rambam, in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam writes, every din that I quote in my Sefer Yara Hazaka in the Mishnah Torah is Ish min pi Ish ad Ezra ad Moshe Rabbeinu. There was a stage. Ezra was the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah. That was a new period in the history of the Jewish people. That was the main development of the Torah Shebal Peh. The Gemara has a whole discussion. The Torah should have really been given by Ezra, except that Moshe Rabbeinu chapped the mice. Moshe Rabbeinu came before, so he had, what kind of a lashon is that? The Gemara quotes Psukim in the second parak in Sanhedrin to indicate that really, Roy Hoy Ezra Shetinas and Torah al Yodai, and to demonstrate that it really should have been given by Ezra, if not for the fact Moshe Rabbeinu chapped the mice. So that's why the Rabbeinu Shalom told Ezra to change the script of the Sefer Torah, the Ksav Ashuris. The block letters that we use, that started different opinions in the Talmud. The accepted opinion is, that began from the days of Ezra. It's Ksav that came from Ashur. That's why it's called Ksav Ashur. It's in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu till the days of Ezra. For centuries they had a different script. The funny alphabet, that they have on the Hammurabi stones. A different alphabet. And in order to demonstrate that there was a new Kabbalah Satorah now, in the days of Ezra, so the script of the Sefer Torah was changed. So the rabbis say this new Kabbalah Satorah Shebal Peh, this reacceptance, the Kimbo Vikimbo, began right after the Nes Purim. And then came Ezra, the beginning of the building of the Second Temple. And then we read in the book of Nehemiah, in the middle of the book of Nehemiah, they had a Ksav Amana. They had representatives of each one of the 12 tribes signed a document where they promised in the name of the tribes that they're going to observe all the mitzvahs. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu should no longer destroy the Beis HaMikdash. This new Kabbalah Satorah enabled them to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And another Yirmiyah prophesied this. He said he's going to make a Bris HaKadosha with the Jewish people, and that Bris HaKadosha is going to be like written on their hearts. That's what Torah Shebal Peh is all about. Torah Shebichtav is written on parchment, so you can leave the Sefer Torah, walk away, and you break the bris. If the Torah Shebal Peh is engraved on your heart, it's something that's transmitted within the person's heart. It's not in a book, it's not in a text. So that's what the Navi Yirmiyah says. They won't be able to run away from the Torah Shebal Peh. This new Krisis Bris that began from the days of Nes Purim through Ezra, through the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, through the Bris Amana that's described in the book of Nehemiah, this Krisis Bris, HaChadosha, is what enabled us to build the Second Temple and what enables us to rebuild the Third Temple. If that Bris would have been violated, like the first Bris Sinai would have been violated, the first Bris Sinai was violated, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, is destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Baruch Shalom says, in the words of Yirmiyahu Navi, I'm going to make a new Krisis Bris. This time you will not be able to run away from it. It'll chase after you. The Bris HaKadosha, the Bris on the Torah Shebal Peh will be in your hearts. And there won't be any way to break that Bris. Even if you run away from the Torah, you won't be able to run away from it. So that Bris, in the days of Purim, is what enabled us at that time to build the Second Temple. It's what enables us to build the Third Temple as well. So basically, what the commentaries explain, how do they have the right to institute Purim as a Yontif if the next Purim had nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash? There was no Beis HaMikdash at that time. And if he instituted Yantiv, that should be observed all over the world by the Jews everywhere. Isn't this a violation of Baal Tosef? So all of the commentaries on the Gemara say they felt there was an Aschalta de Geula for one reason or another. The first two reasons that we gave, that they had wiped out Amalek, the other reason is because Esther had a foot in the government, and later she convinced her son Atachshasta to pay money to build Yerushalayim, to build the Beis HaMikdash. Those reasons would only explain why we should continue, why we had the right to establish the Yom Tov of Purim at that time. But after the destruction of the Second Temple, you should say no room for celebration. The real explanation, the real reason why we feel that the Nes Purim was the Aschalta de Geula is the third reason. That's why the Gemara comes to the conclusion that even after the destruction of the Second Temple, we still continue to celebrate Purim. Why? It's an Aschalta de Geula for the third Beis HaMikdash. We are celebrating already in anticipation of the building on the third Beis HaMikdash. And basically, that's what the commentaries say on the Gemara with respect to Hanukkah. Hanukkah was instituted when the Hasmonaim were victorious against the enemy 200 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. Middle of the period of the Second Temple. The Beis HaMikdash was full of Avodah Zarah, and they were not offering korbanos to God in heaven. So the Hasmonaim cleaned up the Beis HaMikdash, and they rededicated everything. They had to make a new Mizbech, they had to make a new menorah, and there was room to celebrate, so they made a Yontif. So this was good for 204 years, why they celebrated Hanukkah. After the destruction of the Second Temple, why are they still celebrating Hanukkah? They can't be celebrating because of the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was straightened out. It was just destroyed. No more reason to celebrate. So the answer is, at that time, the rabbis felt that Hanukkah was also going to lead to the building of the Third Temple. Why so? So again, if you look in Haggai, the prophecy of Haggai, when the people were crying, when the old people were crying, and you couldn't hear the rejoicing of the younger people because there were so many old-timers, and they said, there's so much missing. Chosa chamisha dvarim. There were 25 things missing. Everything was missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. So the people were very, very disappointed. What are they wasting their efforts and energies? They're not getting anywhere. This is a fake. This is an imitation Beis HaMikdash. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, all the three encourage them. So Haggai tells them, don't worry, the Shekhinah is here, but it's hidden. The Navi Haggai says, B'nevuah, I'm going to cause a tremendous nest to occur in the future. Haggai is at the beginning of the building on the second Beis HaMikdash. He says, B'nevuah, a nest is going to occur in a few centuries during the period of the Second Temple. That'll be obvious that there's a Shekhinah that's hidden here in the Beis HaMikdash, but the it'll make it obvious that your work is not wasted. There is a Shekhinah. And although the Shekhinah before and after this Nes, Rashi in his commentary on Haggai says it's an allusion to the Nes Chanukah. The Navi said in advance, a Nes Chanukah will occur during the period of the Second Temple to demonstrate that, for what purpose? To demonstrate that there is Hashuas HaShekhinah. But what good is that there's Hashuas HaShekhinah? He says, no. The main thing is that what we're building now, the second Beis HaMikdash, is going to be a haschala for the third Beis HaMikdash. Unlike the first and the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It was oru oru ad hayisoid bo, the Pasuk says in Tehillim. And the Medrash says everything was utterly destroyed. The second Beis HaMikdash was never utterly destroyed. The building in the second Beis HaMikdash was the hachana for the third Beis HaMikdash. That's why the Novi Zechariah, when he has the prophecy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so he's shown the vision of the golden menorah, and it's such a golden period of Jewish history, and everything happened by itself, and the two olive trees representing the high priest is supposed to be anointed with olive oil, and the king, the Malchus Beis David, is supposed to be anointed with olive oil. There was no melech from the Malchus Beis David during the whole period of the Second Temple. There were Kahanim Gedolim, but none of them had Mashiach B'Shem and Amishcha, because the Pasuk tells us in Divrei Yomim that Yoshio HaMelech had hidden the Shem and Amishcha. He hid the Shem and Amishcha in the basement of the Beis HaMikdash years before the destruction of the First Temple. They never used Shem and Amishcha during the whole period of the Second Temple. So what was the Navi Zechariah being shown over here? A golden era of the two olive men. That's what the Navi Yester Malach, what is it supposed to represent? He says, these are the Shnei B'nei HaYitzar. These are the two olive men, the Kohen Gadol and the Melech and the Malchus Beis David, who are anointed B'Shicha B'Shem and Amishcha. So the Navi says, but it doesn't correspond to reality. The whole period of the Second Temple is not going to be a golden period of Jewish history. There was machlokes keseda throughout. There was trouble. There were wars all the time. There was trouble from the tzedukim all the time. And there was no Malchus Beis David. There was no Kunig Doyle with Mashiach B'Shem and Amishcha. So the Navi was told, no, I'm showing you a vision of the third Beis HaMikdash. So he said, but what does it have to do now? But we're working on the second. So the Baruch Shalom tells the Navi, no, the second Beis HaMikdash is the Haskalah for the third Beis HaMikdash. So the Mefarshim and the Gemara say that's why we still continue to celebrate Hanukkah today. For the last 200 years of the Second Temple, they celebrated Hanukkah, because on the occasion of Hanukkah, they celebrated the commemoration of the fact that they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash for Karbonis, and they made a new Mizbeach, and they made a new Menorah. But after the destruction of the Second Temple, why does it make sense to still celebrate Hanukkah? The answer is, because they were told by the Navi Chagai, the Nes Chanukah is to indicate that there is a Shekhinah hidden, which will be obvious and apparent to all when the third Beis HaMikdash will be built, that the Nes Chanukah is going to show on the third Beis HaMikdash. That's in fact in the Hasidish Sfarim, they quote the Pasuk in Shir HaMalas, as they say, Arachti Ner LeMashichi. If you look in the Shir HaMalas, the Pasuk reads, Arachti Ner LeMashichi. And the Hasidish Sfarim, they say, we tzind on the Chanukah licht as a simen abiyas HaMashiach. But leaving out the Chassidish Sfarim, that's what the Mefarshim on the Gemara say. That the reason why we still continue to celebrate Chanukah and Purim, unlike all the other holidays of Megillah Tanis, because all the others only had to do with the Second Temple. So it only makes sense to celebrate this month that you have a Second Temple. So you're celebrating and rejoicing over the fact that, in commemoration of the fact that the Second Temple was built and was defended and protected and improved, and all the institutions of the Temple were improved. After the destruction of the Second Temple, it doesn't make sense to celebrate any longer. Except for these two, Hanukkah and Purim, are not only connected with the Second Temple, they're connected with the Third Temple as well. Nes Purim was the occasion of Kabbalah Satara Kimu Vikiblu. And Hanukkah was prophesied in advance, centuries in advance, by the Navi Chagai to demonstrate that there is a hidden Shekhinah which will become obvious and apparent when the third temple will be built. There will be a greater Gila Shekhinah than there ever was in the days of the Mishkan. That's what it says in the Pesukim in Navi. So that's why, just in conclusion, in literature, non-Jewish literature, some of the Goyim describe Purim as the Jewish Halloween. The Jews get drunk, and they masquerade, and all kinds of wild things going on. The celebration of Purim is supposed to be a serene celebration. There's a mitzvah to get a little, to drink a little extra. And many have the custom to masquerade, zecher to the fact that in the days of the Tanakh, in the days of the Nes Purim, the Goyim were making believe that they were Jewish, and the Jews make believe that they're Goyim, they masquerade. But the celebration of Purim is supposed to be a celebration of Kabbalah Satorah. In Shulchan Aruch they have a discussion, how come, they pose a very limited question, how come on Purim there's a mitzvah to have a suda, and Hanukkah there's no mitzvah to have a suda? Basically it's a much bigger question. How come from all of the 50, 60 holidays in Megillah Tainis, the only one that has a suda is Purim? How come the other 59 don't have a suda? It's not just a question of Hanukkah and Purim. Question Purim as opposed to everything else. So the official answer that appears in the Gemara, in our text of the Gemara, doesn't appear. But the Gaonim had this text in the Gemara. The Gemara says there's a dispute between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, how he's supposed to celebrate Pesach, how he's supposed to celebrate Sukkot. Are you supposed to have a lot of eating and drinking, or the Chazan should daven long and the Rabbi should give a lot of shiurim? So the Gemara says, but Shavuos Hakol Moedim. Everybody agrees on Shavuos. Yom Kabbalah Satorah, you have to have an elaborate meal. The Kovet Kabbalah Satorah, you have to have an elaborate meal. So then the Gemara says the next line, and Hakol Moedim, all the Tanoim, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, they all agree that on Purim also you have to have an elaborate meal, because it's Yom Kabbalah Satorah. It's Kimu V'Kiblu. The reason why there's a Suda on Purim as opposed to Hanukkah, as opposed to the other 59 holidays in Megillah Tainis, because on Purim is supposed to be celebrating Kabbalah Satorah. It's supposed to be a serene, serious celebration. Okay, you drink a little bit, the zecher to the mashke that they gave at the party in the days of Haman. But the main celebration should be the Kabbalah Satorah. So on Purim, we have to keep in mind, we have to start, since Shulchan Aruch, it's 30 days before Pesach. So you have to start learning Hilchos Pesach. You have to spend a little more time on Purim learning Torah than the rest of the year. We shouldn't eat and drink and waste time the whole day. We should realize that the essence of the Yom Tov of Purim is really we're celebrating the Kabbalah HaTorah, which will enable us to build the third Beis HaMikdash, Shehibara B'Mehera V'Yomein. Thank you very much.